Thank you, everyone, for being here with us today on Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. COVID-19 and conflict, the two seem to go hand in hand, one of the most stressful side effects of the pandemic, something that Perseverance Theater and other arts organizations plan to address as they return to holding in-person events. The first step, a de-escalation training program that Leslie Ishii initiated after someone accosted her at a local grocery store because she's Asian. Leslie Ishii is director of Perseverance Theater and joins us now along with Sandy Fortier, director of Juno Jazz and Classics. And Leslie, let's begin with you because you got the ball rolling after that disturbing encounter. All the more troubling because the timing coincided with a shooting in Atlanta that killed 8 Asian women.
Yes, thank you, Rhonda, and thanks for having me back. This is always great to be with you all here at KTOO. Yes, you know, it's actually right around the time of the 8 Asian folks that were basically murdered right on the spot. There had been, since COVID, a huge rise in AAPII, Asian American Pacific Islander Indigenous hate and violence. And so I kind of attributed it to folks thinking it's the Chinese virus and how this whole COVID pandemic has brought up many stereotypes and old tropes around Black, Indigenous, Asian, Latinx stereotypes and rhetoric. So it happened. But, you know, I don't lie down as a victim. I think, what can I do? I've always born and raised in the community and just taught to support and serve community. So I think, what can I do? If this is happening to me, it's got to be happening to other folks. And sure enough, I learned it has been. So I thought, well, maybe we can train our community to kind of be there for each other. Sometimes folks don't say anything or do anything because they're a little nervous. But what if they have tools? What if they have strategies that they can come away with? And then we can just help each other in those moments. And it doesn't mean laying blame or creating more of an argument for one side or the other. It's more that, and this came up in the training, that it's really about de-escalating so it never has to get to a situation where there's violence or hate being exchanged. But instead, let's just de-escalate. Let's just all know we're in the community together, working together, especially to end the pandemic. Do our part, be in partnership. So that's really what spearheaded it. And then we applied for an innovation adaptation grant with the Alaska State Council on the Arts, and we got the grant. And that part of that narrative was to offer this training. So our deepest gratitude to ASCA for supporting us to be able to provide this for the community.
Well, Sandy, you didn't go to the training, but one of your Juno Jazz and Classics members went. And how did that help?
Well, it was perfect timing because it was the day of our first in-person concert, our big concert, the first of three. So I sent a board member and she came and did a little mini training for the volunteers who showed up that night. And gave us a little rundown, and it was earlier in the day, so she had thought through the whole afternoon, how could I apply this to this concert? And so she had maybe three little mini steps, and so we just were able to tweak right before the concert started, and everybody just felt a little bit more prepared, and it went really well. So it was perfect timing for us.
So it turned out that things Well, did you have anybody show up and get upset because you wanted them to wear a mask?
No, we didn't. I think we had told people enough what the expectations were, and we're lucky, just the community that comes to our concerts. We're understanding, and we didn't have any problems, but if we had, we would have been a little more prepared thanks to that training.
So, Leslie, it sounds like the arts community has been banding together to sort of be on the same page as far as how they're going to accept audiences.
Absolutely. In fact, again, a show of gratitude to Nancy DeCherney at the JAC. She helped bring a number of us leaders together when we were asking, how are you going to do this? How's your reopening plan moving forward? And we were able to come together and share. And at that point, I knew we'd gotten the grant so I could share, we'll be scheduling a de-escalation, upstander, bystander training. And everyone was so supportive. And at that point, there were some cases in the Bay Area, you know, Northern California, where arts organizations hadn't come together and patrons were kind of confused. Do I wear a mask here? Do I have to bring my proof of vaccination there? And then they had artists, when they found out that they hadn't really come together, or they're certainly just their organization hadn't thought that through yet, or didn't require proof of vaccination, artists were quitting. They were saying, I can't, I'm too nervous. You required me to have proof of vaccination. But if our audience isn't in partnership, I feel like my health's at risk. And this variant is so, it seems like it's really moving through again, like creating all these spikes. So we learned from that article. And then we also learned our dear Molly Smith, the founder of Perseverance Theater, you know, in Washington, D.C.'s arts community. They came together and they said, let's all do the same thing. First of all, it helps our patrons know that they don't have to be one way here, one way there. Let's have proof of vaccination. Let's require masks. Their own region, DC's health mandates were requiring it anyway. But let's come together. Let's message it out together or around the same time. And let's shoulder any of the strife or challenges together. They also knew or had this sort of forethought that if one gets sort of criticized, it might pit us against each other. So let's work together and make sure we get our messaging out and everyone's clear about what the protocols are. At that same time, Broadway came out with their mandate for masks and proof of vaccination. So we were all kind of going, thinking along the same lines. My heart went out to the Bay Area because I think they were just ahead of everybody else, so they didn't quite have the benefit of hearing about some of these other case models that were going well. But that helped our group come together and think about it together. So we've all been pretty kind of created an audience standard that we think helps the audience be in partnership with us. So far, so good.
Well, Sandy, congratulations, first of all, for a successful Juno Jazz and Classics inaugural first fall festival. But that had to have been very tough for you in dealing with people from all across the country that you had to bring in for this festival. And did they have fears about the level of safety in Juno as far as COVID goes and the protocols you would take?
Yeah, that's interesting that Leslie was talking about the artists wondering about what we were doing, because that was a concern. And at first, they were just so excited to be hired and have a gig and to start playing again. And so they were willing to do anything to come up and telling us, yes, we're vaccinated, and giving us any information we need, them asking how they're going to be taken care of for sure. And that helped us make the decision that we needed to require everyone to be vaccinated, including the volunteers, anyone who they would be in contact with. Especially because we had a singer, so she was worried about infecting other people. And the other thing is, they were flying across the country and they took extreme measures to stay safe for us, and they wanted to have the same in return. So that was happening when we were meeting with the arts groups. And the thing is, you have to plan so far ahead. It was around the time where Broadway was making those decisions and we were all meeting, and we weren't really sure if that was the way everyone was going to go. But it was really nice to hear that all the other arts groups were going to do that in the future after our festival, so then we could make that decision and tell the artists, and then everyone would just feel good about it.
Well, it looks like Juno Jazz and Classics kind of broke the ice to live performances. So everyone's, I think, very happy that you did that this wasn't a total virtual event.
Yeah, thank you. And I felt really supported by all the other arts leaders and encouraged to go forward and try it. And I'm glad it worked out so that now all the other arts groups can go and do their thing and we can all impact the community in the way that we've been doing for a long time.
Well, I know that the city and borough of Juneau has given these events a lot of scrutiny. So I suppose the fact that yours was a success now opens the door for Perseverance Theater, which is going to have its first live performance in how long, Leslie?
Yes. Thank you to Juno Jazz and Classics. You did literally break the ice, and we were happy to support each other in that meeting. Yes, we will be opening October 29th, Voyager 1, which I'm really excited about. It's about that Golden Record project that happened in the 70s under the Carter administration when they sent that time capsule up into space. Speaking of music, there's a lot of really cool rock and roll and different kinds of music on that actual Golden Record. So you can imagine the script addresses some of that. So it's a really fun script. And it's juxtaposed with scenes well into the future, which is sort of what we're all trying to do, is project our future. What's going to happen? How do we prepare? What are we learning from this pandemic? But it's just got a lot of good humor. It gets you thinking. I love all of our designers are amazing. I can't wait to be back in person when you can see an actual set and experience the lighting and the sound. And of course, these incredible actors, Aaron Tripp, Kelsey Riker, local actors, and our new artistic apprentice, Jared Olin, who just graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks in theater, film, and TV. So we have an all-Alaskan cast, and the team is fantastic. So this training helped us to have some tools and to be prepared. We don't expect to use it, but you never know. So like you said, Sandy, we just feel better knowing we have some tools in case we need to de-escalate a bit of a misunderstanding or some tensions.
So you said that one part of this training was about bystander response, what to do when you see somebody that's being accosted or even threatened.
That's right. It was great. In the training, the trainers, this was by Impact Boston. And you might remember back to one of our community conversations, Adriana Lee was one of the trainers once again. So it's great we're making a relationship with them. And they not only showed us a role play, I got up and I volunteered to try one so I could test myself. And they supported us all to ask questions and so we could customize knowing we have varying situations. Our lobbies might be a little different or even our patrons might be different. Although we love our Juno patrons, they really support all of the arts. So we sense they'll probably get into the groove of wearing their mask and bringing their vaccination card. But yeah, it was a great training because it was very participatory. So we got to practice a bit. And then they left us with some tools, a good handout to remind us of some good pointers. And coming along soon, I'll be able to share out, they actually were recording those role plays so that we can go back to our staff, our boards, our volunteers, and practice more if we want a refresher.
Leslie, going back to your reason for getting this whole thing started when you were accosted in a store by someone that was upset that you were Asian and blaming you for COVID, do you wish you had had a bystander to intervene? And getting in the middle of things is something that we're reluctant to do just because sometimes we worry that we might make it worse, escalate it.
Absolutely. It would have been great because, when that happens and it's so unexpected, right? You just think you're going to go to the grocery store and do your thing. You might see someone, that happens in Juneau a lot, but I'd never expect, especially here, it's a very close-knit community and everyone's been so friendly and welcoming, even since coming on to this position at Perseverance, just pre-pandemic. But, tensions have been running high, I think, with the pandemic for all kinds of reasons. So when that happened, your adrenaline just shoots up, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, what do I do? What's really happening here? Am I in danger? Or gratefully, I just knew, leave that aisle. And I went to the front where I knew there were other people and I could talk to the person at the register and eventually a store manager. But there's a way that it just takes you off guard. And so we were learning through this training that if there is a bystander, they might be able to just sort of say, hey, is everything okay? Or even distract the person saying, do you know the price of this? And that just sort of gets the person off that track. And they just go, huh? It kind of gets them outside of that mindset a bit. And then everyone just calms a little bit. That alone, that little distraction can actually really support, and it's kind of benign. And there's other things you could do too to say, I'm so sorry, but this is nobody's fault here. let me just move away. And if I'm creating any kind of agitation for you, let me just remove myself. So there's no blame, no, just how do you bring everybody's adrenaline down? You also keep breathing. They talk about breathing deep, making sure you feel your feet kind of grounded, and just breathe so you can just kind of get yourself back centered. And then everyone thinks a little better, you know, gets a little calmer and just, okay, what's really happening here? But in some cases, when you don't know if you can reason with the person, it is best just to say, I'm just going to move away here. Hope you have a good rest of your day, and just move off. Yeah, so they gave us different strategies. And in the case of our training, they made it, customized it as if maybe we're receiving patrons and ticketing and, you know, box office at the front in the lobby at the actual event.
Sandy, do you think that having words prepared in advance helps a lot? Even though you didn't actually have any negative interactions at the Juno Jazz and Classics Fall Festival.
Yeah, I'm just hearing Leslie talk, I'm thinking, wow, we should really incorporate this into our volunteer trainings every time. And so that everybody has words prepared. So then we have a ton of bystanders who will be willing to help if things come up. Because that's kind of my job at the concerts, is to watch for those sorts of things. And for sure, I would like backup if things like that happen. So yeah, I mean, having words prepared, for me personally, is very, very important. For example, we had a board member who would stand at the front where people were coming in and had prepared on her own some things she wanted to say to the people when they were coming in, to remind them to get their vaccine cards out, but in a very friendly way. It was all prepared to her, so then she could kind of see if people were going to react certain ways before they got inside and might have caused the scene.
To me, when these things happen, it's always like, I always think of what to say later. Like, I should have said this. I should have done that, because you're right, Leslie. Like, when you were accosted, it's such a shock that anybody would do that, that you don't know how to respond. So obviously thinking about it helps. I'm looking at the Anchorage Daily News headline for Monday, and it just sort of drives home maybe the reason that we all need to think about our words. Remember when we were in elementary school, people would say, use your words, use your words. But the headline is, assembly civility at an all-time low, say former members. And they're quoting a former Anchorage mayor, Rick Maestrom. It is the most acrimonious that I have ever seen. And then the former city manager, Bill Faulkner, says, there was nothing this nasty. And certainly the escalation of words in this COVID debate seems to get us nowhere, really, at least angry words. So Leslie, what have you learned from that workshop about how we use our words?
Absolutely. That's so important. More spikes. We thought we were moving out, all the frustrations. And again, it brings up any latent kind of prejudice that folks end up kind of defaulting to for part of their reasoning. If they haven't had other experiences that shift that thinking or that approach to other people in their lives, you know, having your words ready. I've done that my whole life, actually. When folks say, you speak English so well, I go, oh, well, thank you. And I'm like fourth generation in this country. So, you know, naturally we've had a lot of practice by now. But yeah, you learn how to and this was really affirmed in that training. Take a deep breath, because it's very easy to be triggered, right, and just kind of respond quickly. But sometimes, like I said, those are the things that are sort of laying dormant back there, and then we default to those unfortunate situations from earlier in our lives. You know, we talk a lot about triggering now, what triggers things, and then we kind of just kind of spout off. But what can we actually do? We can breathe deep, slow down. And then one of the things that's really important they talked about in the training was, Adriana and Michael talked about, was there's no blame here. There's no blame. We all come from different backgrounds and different lived experience that might inform that moment. And in those moments, we don't have time to find out, but we can just slow down and be kind and lay no blame. If someone comes to the door, I forgot my mask. Oh, no worries. We actually have extra here. So we got you. We've got you. So how can we support the situation for everyone to be at their best and do their best, but also arrive and be able to problem solve together? So it's all about building partnership. And that's, again, one of the reasons I thought, how can this training support us to have a community that where we all are looking out for each other's well-being? Sometimes things don't happen because someone has a prejudice, just because something went wrong and they're just frustrated. Or, oh, shoot, it happened again. We don't know. Maybe it's the fifth time that thing has happened. And now they're really built up to something frustrating, expressing that frustration. So we just don't know what's behind in their head or their lived experience. So how can we not lay blame? How can we just say, I'd like to support? But if it does come directly at you, you don't have to take that either, depending on the level of vitriol coming towards you. Maybe it's just a, so sorry, I think you mean somebody else, or I don't think you mean that for me, and then walk off. Or no worries if it's a patron at the door. We've got a mask for you. Or, you know what, if you forgot your card, we really do need that for us all working together for our health and well-being. Let's just look into rescheduling you. We have a run going on for 2 or 3 more weeks. Let's reschedule, and then you'll find your card, or you'll bring your card and it'd be no problem. And then if someone really does start to escalate and it kind of gets other people feeling unsafe and nervous, then that's, and they come at you, that's a moment when you say, oh, please, please stay there. Please don't come any closer. And that's when it's really great that your team has had this training, or one of your colleagues can pass the training along also, because you work together as a team then. And say, you know, is there anything needed here? Someone walks up and supports our team member, says, let me relieve you, Sandy. I'm the manager on site here. Let's just step over here and let's work this out over here. Then other patrons can keep coming in and we just sort of remove that tension from the situation. Sandy, you said every volunteer should have this. We have that thought. We have a new box office manager. They're already working together. How can we coordinate? How do we have the flow in the lobby work so everyone can feel safe, some distancing, and make sure even the footpath can actually be planned out? Yeah, so it's people feel comfortable with distancing.
So wrapping things up, any final thoughts, Leslie?
Oh, just, we can't wait to welcome you back to the theater. October 29th, we come back with Voyager 1. I think you're going to really love it. It's got a touch of rock and roll in there and some good thought-provoking and humorous scenes. And just thank you for being a great partner here in Juno. You all have been amazing. So I look forward to welcoming you back to the theater.
Sandy?
I am really happy that people are ready to safely attend events again. And I'm just so glad that all the arts groups in Juno have joined together to make it the best possible experience for everybody. So I'm good for us for working together. It feels really good.
And good for the community as a whole. It burnishes Juno's reputation as being a great place. Thanks so much.
Great. Okay. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it was great having both of you. This is a really good conversation, an important one. So I'm really appreciative that both of you came here to share some of your own experiences. We have Leslie Ishii with us. She is director of Perseverance Theater, and Sandy Fortier, director of Juno Jazz and Classics. Thanks. Coming up, there is one play that you can enjoy without a mask in the safety of your home, complete with thrills, chills, and lots of cool sound effects. Radio theater coming your way when we come back. You're listening to Idol by Portafay, one of the artists performing next month at the Rock Auk Indigenous Music Festival.
Brothers and sisters, we stand and fight with a drum, a song, this prayer, this change of time. brothers and sisters, I was no more. Together, brothers and sisters, I was no
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, and you are listening to original music composed for Juno Ghostlight Theater's radio play, Dracula. It'll air on KTOO this Thursday night at 7. You can stream it on our website as well, ktoo.org. So, mark your calendars. Just want to put you on notice that this radio play airs only one time. And here to give you some reasons to do that, we have three members from Juno Ghostlight Theater. Roblin Davis, director of Dracula, one of the voice actors, Heather Laverne, she plays Dracula, and the producer of this radio play, Kate Ross. Well, Roblin, let's start with you, because these days, you know, nothing is left to the imagination. TV and movies, they all bring us all the gory details and leave absolutely nothing to the imagination.
Well, it is a wonderful story, and radio theater, radio plays are a great way to, I don't know, inspire our imaginations just by listening to the stories and how you put a radio play together. It's wonderful for the dramatic stories like Dracula, I would say.
These days, almost everything is pictured for us, you know, the horror of everything. What is scary about just hearing about something? Do you think it potentially is even more scary?
Well, it can be. The great thing about art is we do want to meet our audience's imagination and allow for everyone in the audience to kind of imagine their own version of the story. And so just doing it with voices and sound effects and music, I think allows for that in the audience so that they can create kind of their own unique version of it.
So where does this script for this radio play come from?
So this version of Dracula, I actually found a while ago when I was sifting through transcripts of old radio plays that were broadcast in the 1930s. I had read a couple of other Dracula scripts. It sounded like a really fun story that I wanted to produce for radio, but I wasn't really sold on some of the other scripts I had read. And I came across this transcript of the 1938 broadcast of Orson Welles' adaptation of Dracula. And I read the transcript and immediately fell in love with it. It was leaps and bounds better than any other of the Dracula scripts I had read in terms of being for the radio, since it was originally written for radio. So as soon as I found that and started looking into whether or not we could perform it, I was thrilled when I found out that it would be good to go, that we could do the 1938 version.
What appealed to you about that version?
Well, for one, it was written for radio. So there were a lot of things built in, both story arc wise and just with the sound effects and everything else, that it really was written for radio. So there wasn't a lot of, you know, editing on our side for that. The other thing was just Orson Welles' language that he used, especially for Dracula and Mina Harker more towards the end, was just beautiful. It had this romance to it that I really think speaks to the times, as opposed to other scripts I read that were maybe a little more just too much about the violence and not as much about the mental aspect. So some of those Dracula lines really, really got me.
So does this pretty much follow the Bram Stoker novel as far as the plot goes?
Yeah, it does. So Orson Welles actually adapted it directly from the Bram Stoker novel.
So one of the things that everybody enjoys about that novel is all the things that are happening, you know, the people who are suddenly falling ill or who have two strange punctures in their neck. And what could it be? What's causing this? And everybody that's reading it is going, come on, there's a vampire. You know, there's a vampire in there. Does this play have that same quality to it?
I'd say that it does for sure. It's kind of slowly unveiled for the characters. Mostly Van Helsing kind of has an inkling, and he's probably the first to say there are such things as vampires, even though everyone else is like, ah, come on, really?
So Heather, how did you enjoy adapting this story to radio?
I thought it was just a really cool opportunity for us. We had done a radio play back in March, and that was based on Sherlock Holmes stories. And to do Dracula in October, it got me very excited for this season. And this one's a little bit longer. Our original in March was only a half hour long. This is a full hour. It feels very of the radio era. So everything about it just made me feel like we were a part of something that it's a little bit, I don't know. Radio magic, I guess. I thought it was beautiful.
How many characters are in this play, Roblin?
Yeah, there's about a dozen, maybe 15 or so. All of our actors are playing at least two of those characters.
Heather, you play two parts, I understand.
I do. I play Dracula, and I play the ship captain. It's an interesting fate aboard his ship. I think I throw in a couple little voices there. Otherwise, there's a couple one line parts that we all got to do as well. So multiple characters.
So what's that like as an actor or actress, instead of appearing on the stage or playing to a camera, but playing to a microphone?
Yeah, it's a different muscle. When you're acting on stage, you have to use your full body and your facial expressions, and you're able to use those with your voice to tell the story and to create the character. But with radio, you can do those things, but the audience doesn't see it. So you really have to put a lot more into your voice, and that energy still has to be there, but it all has to come through your voice in order to convey what you're trying to get across to the audience.
So I understand that this play has sound effects.
Oh, does it ever?
You want to tell us about some of the choice sound effects that we might hear?
I would love to. First, I just have to shout out our lead Foley artist, Kelsey Riker. So Foley is what we call this type of sound effects we're making, where we're making them in real life and then recording them. So we're using physical objects rather than pulling pre-existing sound effects from some online library. So Kelsey was a fantastic lead artist for us on this and compiling everything. So we met up and recorded a bunch in my garage, actually. And my garage was full of hammers and nails and the wind machine over here and some metal and some, you know, all sorts of different fun things to make all the different sound effects.
So are there like recipes for sounds?
That's a great question. I made up a couple of my own recipes. I did some of our Foley for the Sherlock Holmes radio show back in March. The carriage one was actually one in particular. A lot of the other sound effects are just a one thing, like if it's a hammer pounding a nail, just a hammer pounding a nail. But the carriage is either two or three different layers, depending on what type of carriage it is. But you have horse hoofbeats, and then carriage wheels rolling, and then the tack jingling on the carriage and on the horses themselves. So we figured out actually Tupperware, empty Tupperware on the floor makes really great hoof beats. And we found a couple different ways to make carriage wheels. And then for the jingling, I think I ended up using a couple of my purses and just shaking them. And and when you layer it all together, it sounds like a carriage going down the street.
All right, let's listen. Now, there is something magic about that you made your own sounds.
Yeah, it's a really fun aspect and something that I think makes this radio play really unique is that we decided that for Sherlock Holmes, we were going to make all of them, and we kept that going into this for Dracula. And I think it just adds, I don't know exactly what, some sort of special something. And it makes it more real, more intimate, makes it not sound like something canned, if that makes sense.
Well, when you watch a movie and you see the blood dripping from Dracula's fangs, you sort of feel terror. But how do you simulate that kind of terror with audio?
Well, that's where our sound designer and sound editor, Rasha McChesney, has actually come in a lot. She's taking all of these different aspects of the recorded actors and all of the recorded sound effects. And then we also have brilliant original music from Paige Sparks, who's a piano player. And so Rasha's taking all these elements and putting them together in this way that really weaves the story and brings that sense of atmosphere, whether it's thunder to start a scene or a little bit of piano under something. So I think the sound design of bringing all of those elements together makes a huge difference.
So let's talk about when someone gets punctured in the neck by Dracula. Do we get to hear that?
Maybe. It's pretty gruesome. We were making some pretty funny faces when we recorded that. I won't give away too much, but I will say that it involved a watermelon. So make of that what you will.
So in other words, you simulated puncture marks by puncturing a watermelon.
Yes, we did.
And you think that's pretty scary if you don't know what it is and you just hear it?
Oh, absolutely. Even hearing it in real life when we were the ones doing it, it sounded pretty gruesome. So hearing it in the context of Heather's amazing Dracula voice and all the other sound effects and music. And so to hear something like that, it's effective.
Of course, everybody will want to hear the neck biting.
Well, we're going to save some of that for the show. So you'll have to listen in to hear those particular sound effects.
But I understand that watermelon got a lot of use.
It did. You know, it takes a lot of tries sometimes to get just the right sickening, puncture noise.
Okay, I guess you're not going to let us hear these puncture sounds for now.
It's absolutely incredible. It's the dramatic conclusion of the whole thing, and it just sounds amazing. So you'll have to listen into our broadcast to hear it.
Okay. So what were some of your other favorite sounds?
The thunder was very fun to do. It took a couple people. We had to experiment with a couple different ways of doing it, but basically it's just a big piece of sheet metal and we shake it. And the way you shake it or pound on it or do things like that makes thunder sounds.
Okay, let's let our listeners see if they can picture thunder when they hear this. So it all comes together with dialogue and sound effects. So I understand that you've chosen something for us to hear to give us a flavor of what we're going to hear when the play is presented on the radio. What have you chosen? Set the scene for us.
Yes. So this scene is fairly early on in the play where most of the characters don't really know what's going on around them yet. And this scene takes place on a ship where something strange seems to be happening.
Something strange. Okay, let's hear it.
Log of the Demeter. July 6th. Finished taking in cargo. A queer cargo. Boxes of earth. At noon, set sail. East wind, fresh. Crew, 4 hands, 2 mates, cook, and myself. Captain. July 11th. Entered Bosporus. At dark, passed through Dardanelles. Mate reported in morning that one of crew, Viodin, was missing.
Took larboard watch. 8 bells last night. He was relieved by Talisian, who never came to his bunk. There's something aboard the ship. No, don't laugh, Captain. In the rain last night.
Oh?
A tall, thin man go up the companionway and along the deck forward and disappear. When I go to the bow, no one, and the hatchways were all closed.
July 22nd. Rough weather last 3 days. All hands busy with sails. No time be frightened. Past Gibraltar and out through straits. All well. July 24th. Last night, another hand was lost. Disappeared.
Like Talisian. He come off his watch at midnight and we never see him again.
You take your watch now.
I don't take watch alone no more.
Nor will I.
No more. Double watch.
Double watch.
July 29th. Had single watch tonight as crew too tired to double. When morning come...
Hey! Hey, below! Bollocky! Hey, Bollocky, below!
Bollocky's gone like the others.
Like all the others!
The mate and I have agreed to go armed henceforth. July 30th, last night. We are nearing England. Weather fine. All sails set.
Captain! Captain! The men on watch are missing. More missing!
Now, only self and mate in one hand left to work ship. August 3rd. 2 days of fog and not a sail sighted. At midnight, I went to relieve the man at wheel. And when I got to it, I found no one there.
It's here. I know it now. I saw it. Like a man, tall and thin and ghastly pale. It was in the bows looking out. I gave it the knife. And my knife went through it, empty as the air.
What are you talking about?
It's here, and I'll find it. It's in the hold, it's in one of those boxes of earth. I'll unscrew them one by one and see, and see.
He's mad, stark raving mad. It's no use my trying to stop him. He can't hurt those big boxes. They are invoiced as common earth.
Ah! He's there, down in the hold. I know the secret now. The sea will save me from him. That's all that's left.
That's all that's left!
Heather, you played Dracula, but we didn't hear Dracula in that scene.
No, he's there, but he's not talking. He's too busy biting, I think.
Well, you sound very warm and friendly right now, and it's hard to picture you as Dracula from the way you sound right now, your normal speaking voice. Can you give us a little taste of Dracula?
Sure. So Dracula, he does this thing in the play where he essentially hypnotizes his victims, allows them to go into a trance so that he can bite them. The way that he does that is by slowly moving in and goes,
"Flesh of my flesh, blood of my blood, blood of my blood."
So that's my Dracula.
It's so authentic.
Thank you. Yeah, I had to become undead for a moment, but I'm back now.
So, Roblin, what are your favorite parts of the play that you think that listeners will really enjoy?
Well, the mystery. It's a really interesting story that has a little bit of romance, a lot of mystery, a little bit of horror. So all of those threads weave together into a really compelling story.
Gosh, this sounds like this was so much fun, almost as much fun to put together as it is to listen to.
You know, it was so lovely to work with the cast. What a very talented group. And we did a lot of rehearsals over Zoom, but then when we actually got together in a safe way to rehearse a few times in person, that was just so lovely to be working in a creative way with a group of people again. So this is one way that Juno Ghostlight Theater is able to continue putting out creative work for our community. Just want to really say thank you for, and thank you to KTOO for airing it as well, to give our listening audience, you know, an hour of compelling, rich, theatrical radio experience.
Well, it is exciting that Juno Ghostlight Theater has been able to keep going during the pandemic, and I guess has sort of risen to the occasion with an alternative to a live production that still gives all the actors and actresses and directors and theater company members an outlet. Kate, do you think that you're going to stay with us and maybe not return to in-person? Or, I mean, it seems like you've discovered some magic.
Yeah, absolutely. The magic that's there. I had no idea I would have such a passion for radio dramas. I mean, I knew I liked radio theater, but I didn't know it would be this much fun. As far as for Juno Ghostlight Theater, we will absolutely return to in-person live productions once it is fully safe to do so. However, we're a very, very small theater company. We're run entirely by a board of volunteers. So to do anything larger and in person at the moment isn't feasible, but we will continue looking at radio until we can return to in person. And, you know, even when we're back to being able to gather in person safely, I think we're going to keep doing radio shows. This is too much fun to stop doing. I think it's going to be part of our repertoire for a long time.
So people have only one evening to hear this, just one opportunity. Seems like a lot of work for just one performance.
That's true, but I think of other events around town that maybe it's a live concert that's a one night only thing, and it would be fun to do a run of shows. But to me, part of the magic of doing it in general is trying to evoke this sense of old-time radio dramas where it would be a serial, it would happen every week at the same time. A family or maybe a group of friends would all, you know, gather around the radio to listen in a very purposeful and intentional way. So I really like that aspect. And that's something that we're kind of trying to go after with having this be a one-time broadcast.
You can't have audio on demand then.
No, unfortunately, not the way that we're doing it right now. We are looking into options of potentially being able to, whether it's rebroadcast or have people listen at another time. But for right now, it's one time only. So set your calendars, everybody.
All right. So give us the particulars one more time so we don't miss it.
Yeah. So Juno Ghostlight Theater presents Dracula. Thursday, October 21st at 7 p.m. on KTOO 104.3, or you can listen online at ktoo.org/listen.
All right, Heather, give me your best Dracula voice and encourage people to tune in.
Okay.
Juno, get your radio set. It's time to listen to Dracula. On October 21st at 7 p.m.
Well, this has been absolutely delightful. Thank you for giving us this preview. Roblin Davis, director of Dracula. Heather Laverne, a voice actor and also playing Dracula. Kate Ross, the producer, all from Juno Ghostlight Theater. We also want to give thanks to Paige Sparks and Rasha McChesney here at KTOO for sharing some of the music and the sound effects.
Thank you.
And that will do it for Juno Afternoon, broadcast live on KTOO 104.3 FM, online at ktoo.org, and repeated at 4 on KRNN 102.7 FM. Juno Afternoon is a production of the KTOO Arts and Culture team, which includes Shelley Delaney, KXLL Chandra Boom, and the leader of our team, Cheryl Snyder. I'm Rhonda McBride, your host for today. Until next time, thanks for joining the conversation from all of us at KTOO. Gunakshish. Have a good evening.